Tu eres muy malo. Roto el pato de vestuario. La interpretación siempre negativa. Siempre negativa. Nunca positiva.
Welcome to Siempre Positivo. Barca go second. Pedri, 6 wins in a row, 13 unbeaten in all competitions. How is that for a dose of Monday positivity? I am Sam Marsden, and Rick Sharma and Tony Wanmati are here to discuss the Javi Netta's latest stop, a 1-0 win against Sevilla at Camp Nou on Sunday. Rick, how are you?
Doing well. Drinking some tropical juice from the supermarket that's open across the road. It's always convenient when a new supermarket opens even closer than the previous one. So that's going to be my new stop, Caprabo. Not an advert for Caprabo, but that's what it is.
Tony, I'm hoping you have some more exciting news than Rick's news about supermarkets opening.
No. Not exciting news, but yes, good morning. As I told you on the last pod, yes, some changes at work. And yesterday games was my last day to work in sport after a long period there. So today when I woke up, it was supposed to be like the beginning of the new life, but the truth is nothing changed. My flat is still the same. It's not tidy. The fridge is still the same. So there was nothing magical on that. It's all the same for the moment.
Tony, what can you tell us about your next move? Because I'm hearing it could be a Luis Figo type move to Mundo Deportivo.
No. I'm not allowed to to say exactly the project, but well, it's going to be like another newspaper, digital newspaper. Talking about, of course, about Barca, and it's going to be like announced in a couple of weeks or something like that. But well, yes, the important now, or what I think now, is that I'm done in sport after 11 years, so I'm a bit sad for that. So,
but just for the record, no to Mundo Deportivo, not for the money. You're not going for the money that was being talked about there. Hundreds of thousands.
No, yes, I can say that I'm not going to Mundo Deportivo, and I'm not going to Chiringuito, as I read on the Discord. So there was no beef with El Chiringuito. They had an agreement. They had a meeting with my agent, but there was no an agreement. I am the new Rudiger. No, I'm kidding.
Just finally, people also want to know, what does this mean for your future with Siempre Positivo?
Well, I will talk to the bosses of Siempre Positivo with Sharma Alemany and Marcin Cruyff. And if they want me to stay, I have better offers from Premier League clubs. So they know that I want to stay as Usman. I want to stay, but they have to pay me the right commission if they want me to keep me.
Let's see what happens there on that developing story. Before we get into the Sevilla game, first of all, a quick message just to send all our positivity to Louis van Gaal, who announced on Sunday he's suffering from prostate cancer. As you will all know, the podcast name is a reference to van Gaal's famous Siempre Negativo rant when he was the Barca coach. So he's always close to our thoughts when we record this pod, or when we're sort of making sort of banter about being positive or negative. And it was just a few weeks ago that Javi was talking about how profound Van Gaal's influence was on the club and on him as a coach, in his sort of development as a coach, perhaps more than we realise. Maybe older fans will have a better idea, but you know, I personally was quite young when Van Gaal was at Barcelona, and have a great knowledge of what he was like, obviously, apart from sort of what I've read since and what I've seen, and obviously the chances he gave to young players. So let's hope that Van Gaal pulls through. Let's hope he can take the Netherlands to the World Cup and take them far. Moving on to the game, Barcelona racked up 19 shots against the Sevilla side that have the tightest defence in La Liga. They may have been on a bad run recently in terms of lots of draws, but they don't lose many precisely because they're so good at the back. They conceded just 19 in the 29 league games before Sunday. But for Bono, who saved from Ferran Torres, Ronald Araujo, Gerard Pique also hit the bar. Barca may have led earlier, but it actually worked out quite well that they didn't in the end, I think, because Pedri's goal was much better than any of those would have been, and a much better way to win the game. He dumped Rakitic and Diego Carlos on the floor and fired in from 20 yards. And a genuine golazo. Javi celebrated it effusively, probably one of the highlights of the game, Javi's celebration. And it was a win that Barca deserved, Rick.
Yeah, no doubt at all about that. if you look at it from the other perspective, the chances that Sevilla made, there were very, very few. Ter Stegen made a couple of saves from sort of not long range, but not... Well, they weren't good opportunities. And then the best chance came right at the end after Ter Stegen punched badly at a cross and it landed to Augustinsson. But Ter Stegen recovered, made up for his own error by saving the shot. And that was it. So Sevilla offered very little. Barca in the first half, I mean, they dominated the game, but they didn't create that many chances. The only kind of two I can think of was a great cross from Dembele, which Frankie de Jong should have scored, but he headed over the bar. And Aubameyang at the end of the half, played in again by Usman Dembele, and his difficult angle, but his shot was saved by Bono. But second half, the chances did flow. Dembele was involved in absolutely everything. I don't think Barca would have created anything if it wasn't for Dembele in this game, because even though his final ball wasn't always the most accurate, he certainly did enough to rack up some assists. A very nice low sort of cutting cross for Ferran Torres, which was tipped over by Bono as well. And then even the goal, which came from Pedri, and only Pedri, because it was just magical from him, was in the end was a pass, as Xavi highlighted after the game, from Ousmane Dembele to set him up. So even though it was all Pedri's work, Xavi thought to highlight the contribution of Dembele in that move, probably because he did exactly what he wanted him to, stayed wide, got the ball out wide, and then made a good decision of who to pass to from that position. I think Barca played very professionally, was the word I was on television yesterday, used the word professionally to describe their performance. It wasn't spectacular like in some of the other games where they've hit four against Atletico or Napoli, Valencia or whatever, or Athletic, but it was very solid. And I think this harks back to what Tony was saying a lot in the Ronald Koeman era, where he was saying, if we can't defend, then we can't do anything. And the defence now has four clean sheets in the last five games. So even though we've given a lot of credit to the attackers, to Aubameyang, Dembele, Ferran, we also must give credit to the defence, because they've become a lot tighter. Of course, that's to do with the system and the way that Barca are playing as a whole, but basically a lot better at both ends.
But Rick, when you say giving credits to the defence, of course, an important part of credit to the defence. But as Xavi has said many times, the better way of defending is pressing high. So I would say that we should give credits to the strikers, because Ferran, Usman, Auba, and also the midfielders are pressing really high. So the other team does not have to think with the ball. And if they don't have to think with the ball, they have to shot or making long distance pass, and then you recover the ball quickly. So I think the most important thing, apart from defense, is that the team is making a high pressure, and that's the key for
not
me.
Just the high press, Tony, but there was a moment in the second half where Dembele, and this perhaps was the greatest roar anything Dembele did all night, brought from the crowd, tracking back, and a slide tackle, sort of a jump challenge, just to give away a throw in around the halfway line with Barca 1-0 up. Have you ever seen anything like that from Dembele before, that sort of commitment?
Yes, that was surprising, because, no, you know, more or less we all had the feeling that Ousmane Dembele, when he was on the pitch, he was like, the feeling that you could have from him is like that he didn't care if the game was going properly or not, if the team was winning or not. I'm not saying he was unprofessional, but like not a hot player in terms of Gattuso or Puyol or these players really connected to the game. And now you can realize that he really wants to continue at Barca, and that's why all these informations about he asked Xavi to get a meeting between the club and the agents. For the first time since I have been watching Usman at Barca, I see him trying to show that he wants to stay, and on all these runnings, defending, really focused, concentrated, helping Dani Alves. That was great, and yes, unexpected. So I think yes, Usman is showing his best attitude to tell to the Camp Nou, hey, I really want to stay here, and that's why that's my way of saying that.
I think that the one mistake that we made when we made our Xavi bonus episode about everything he's done, all the changes he's made since coming to Barca, all the effects, the one mistake we made, we didn't talk maybe enough or even at all about Ousmane Dembele, because of any coach that Dembele's had at Barca, it's Xavi who's been able to harness him the best. Xavi who's been able to bring him on side. Xavi who's been able to make him track back and, as you say, made that tackle against Sevilla. Xavi who's employed a style of play which allows Dembele to take as many risks as he like. and the team can recover easily after when he loses the ball, as wingers tend to do. So I think we've got to give Xavi credit for that. I mean, that episode, we covered basically everything, but that's one thing we didn't talk about.
Tony, on Dembele as well, and tell me I'm reading too much into this. I've gone full Mundo Deportivo Sport tabloid, but after the game, his Instagram post, Dembele often posts on Instagram. He often doesn't put a caption. Sometimes he'll put Forza Barca. Yesterday, he posted a caption in Spanish.
Yes, that's why I tell you that I see him more focused in many things, not only in these details on Instagram. If you take a look at the last 8-9 goals of Barcelona, Dembele is always in the center of the party, hugging with Pedri, with Frankie. We didn't see this kind of pictures of images a couple of months ago. Now he's really focused, adapted, happy. So I think really that the option that he's going to stay are going each time incredibly are now more high. But in terms of his renewal, just to add one little detail, because that's what I thought yesterday, looking the game, watching the game. It's true that he had a good performance. It's true that now it's very positive, because before doing the pass or doing the cross, he takes 2 more seconds. And these 2 more seconds, I think, it's all by Xavi. Xavi got Usman to think 2 extra seconds before taking decisions. And if you know, Usman has like a bit of calm. For example, that pass to Pedri, or some crosses that he did, looking where to put the ball. So he's now like more smart player, a smarter player, and that's very interesting. But at the same time, sometime on the last pass, he needs to take better decisions. So what I want to say with that, is he a good player? Yes. And a very interesting player? Yes. But should Barca lose the head with the offer? I still think no, because Usman is being great, but he's not being the one that is deciding games. So I still think that the offer that was made to him, it was the fair one, because still he's not being like the Messi of Barcelona or the Mbappé of Paris Saint-Germain. And if you are not like this, you cannot be paid like the best of the team.
Yeah, that's the next step under Xavi, perhaps. You know, he's only been working with Xavi, what, four or five months now. So if he can sort of next season consistently go to that level, then perhaps he could demand that wage. But obviously the contract needs to be signed before then. Rick, thinking about that Xavi episode that we recorded last week, perhaps also we didn't speak enough about the importance of Pedri, because obviously Koeman was denied Pedri at the start of this season. Xavi didn't have him in those early weeks, and he's come back into the team since January. And along with the new signings, that's coincided with Barca's best run of form this season in terms of results and performances. And after that Galatasaray game 2 weeks ago, just before the international break, you actually commented after we recorded, saying perhaps we didn't talk about Pedri's goal enough. So let's talk about Pedri's goal now, because I mean, we can't not talk about this one, this winner against Sevilla.
Do you know, actually, when he scored that goal against Sevilla, the first thing I thought of was us not talking that much about Pedri's goal on the pod, because like you said, I mentioned it to you. And it was a very similar goal, actually, because even though it's from outside the box and from the other side of the pitch, it's he beats a man or two men, and then he waits, and then he beats another man or two men, then he waits, and then he gets his shot away calmly into the bottom corner. It was just, the goal itself was a fantastic moment and a fantastic goal. And it's something that he's needed to add to his game. We saw last season, he did everything apart from score goals, really. And he missed some big chances. And I thought, well, if he can add goals to his game, he's going to be the perfect midfielder. And he's done it. And I know it's early in his career, 19, to make big claims. But I was talking to my editor this morning at Goal about a Pedri article we're going to be doing on Thursday. And I was saying, well, honestly, are there any better midfielders in the world apart from Kevin De Bruyne? And, you know, if you want to include defensive midfielders, maybe N'Golo Kante or someone like that. But it's in terms of sort of central midfielders who are attacking, Kevin De Bruyne and Pedri. And that's it. Those are the best two, in my opinion. I'm happy to be corrected if people have other ideas. But that's how good he is. And it's like signing a £100 million player in January, as well as we talked about the impact of the other January signings. But Pedri was the biggest January signing. Like, if you imagine a club trying to buy Pedri now, how much would they have to pay? 200 million? 300 million? I don't know what his cost would be. It'd be insane.
And in fact, he already extended his contract, but I don't know even in how many time, in how, I mean, how quickly is the new contract of Pedri going to get like old, no? Because in terms of growing up each day in the pitch, getting more the leader of this team, maybe the club needs to extend his contract again in 1 year or something like that, because his level, his performance, it's been absolutely great, no? He was keen on, or he wanted to score, to start scoring goals and giving assists, because he felt that he was playing great and well, but he needed to add some stats to the good feelings, and now he's really doing that. So at that point, it's the truth. If you compare at his age with other players like Xavi and Iniesta, he's much better. Of course, the difficult part of his career is Xavi and Iniesta were great and brilliant during lots of years, but if you do an exercise like, okay, this level of Pedri, if he can keep this level in 10 years, this is, I don't know, I don't remember a player at this level at his age. Of course, after that, okay, Monchi said that after the game that Pedri was going to be an historical player. To get that, of course, it's not only that you are a good player, and even more as a midfielder. If you are a striker, for example, with like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, yes, you can be a legend without winning a lot of trophies. But as a midfielder, I think you'll need to win like World Cups, Euro Cup, Champions League to be historical. So it will also depend on how many titles his team is able to win. But I think it's not like saying too much, as Rick said, for the moment. Who would you buy instead of Pedri? Okay, maybe De Bruyne is at Pedri's level, but I make the question different. Who would you swap as Barca fan Pedri for? A midfielder that you would say, okay, I would accept this deal. Would you make a swap deal between Pedri and Kanté or Pedri and De Bruyne? Do you think that Mateo would do that?
Because the ages.
Yeah, so what I want to say is that you don't have any better option in the world than Pedri.
The crazy thing about Pedri as well is even before the goal, when you watch him, and I don't, it's kind of a contrast I'm about to say, because I don't think he makes bad decisions. He makes the right decision, but sometimes I think, and not to compare him to Messi, but sometimes you got the sensation that Messi was perhaps too extreme the other way. You got the impression that Messi, as well as knowing what the right decision did, also sort of considered who the right decision was, if that makes sense. So like if he saw perhaps player X who he didn't completely trust, he would perhaps delay the option. And sometimes Pedri gives the ball to someone who's technically in a better position, but you think, I'd rather have Pedri in the position he was in than giving it to player Y out there or whatnot. And obviously also shooting a little bit more. And sometimes like there's just so many underrated sides to his games, you know, just the... Despite how sort of small he looks on the pitch and he doesn't look especially fast, the way he can sort of just sort of glide past players in that sort of, and again, sorry with the comparisons, but that sort of Iniesta style is like also sort of an underused part of the game, because he's so focused on, like Javi says, on thinking about the pass, the next pass, the final pass, the decisive pass, playing the game that way, that there are so many sort of underrated sides of his game that he's probably even better than we think he is.
Yeah, and wait till he's confident enough to try everything he knows he can do as well. I mean, I'm not saying he's not confident. He's one of the bravest players out there at 19, controlling games from the midfield and taking the ball under a lot of pressure. He's very, very good anti-press. He sort of has this body technique where he can let the ball sort of go to his other side without physically doing much. But suddenly it's like the whole other side of the pitch is available, even though it's so strange to describe. I'm going to need to find a better way to do it by the time I write the article. But do you also think that he's the fan favourite player now at Barca? Ansu Fati, perhaps the other one, but he's been injured the whole time, so...
No doubt about it. Yes, no doubt.
I mean, I didn't go yesterday. I was at the working and TV thing. But what was the atmosphere like after Pedri's goal?
No. Not only with Pedri's goal. Also before, with a great play that he did, that at the end it was a corner kick. The Camp Nou shouting, Pedri, lots of times. And I will tell more, because for me it was surprising. I don't know if some... that lately has gone more than me to the Camp Nou, if it's normal or not, but around 10-15 minutes after the game, with only like 10-12,000 people in the stands, in the stadium, also shouting, Pedri, Pedri, like with the stadium almost empty. And the people kept shouting, Pedri, Pedri. So definitely, yes, for the moment, I think he's the number one of that team.
At the moment, yeah. I mean, the context of that was impressive, what Tony says. I guess the context is Pedri had stayed out to do all the interviews, so he was still out on the pitch. So they were sort of chanting at him on the pitch. It wasn't that they'd stayed. But yeah, I've not seen that with an interviewee for a long time.
And it's also more important because, you know, when you are so young, you start getting that money, that status, these sponsors, this life, these girls, these people that they want to contact you, write you, praising you, the media. It's really easy to fall on a black hole and thinking that you are God. And everybody on his camp, they tell you that he doesn't pay any attention on this, that he's just a kid, that he's playing football. So this is the best part, I think, that he's only focused on playing and this is the only what matters for him, only thinking at football, watching football when he's at home. I don't know, it's really incredible the way he's dealing with his new life. I'm impressed because of that.
Yeah. Hard to be too critical with the run Barca are on, but just to, I mean, apply some balance, I guess. I don't know, there's always room to improve. I mean, not only are they on a great run, but like as Rick highlighted before, the clean sheets, and not least two clean sheets in their last two games against Real Madrid and Sevilla of all teams, but a couple of off nights against Sevilla. Tony, I don't know, Dani Alves for me was a little bit suspect defensively, got found out a couple of times. Ferran Torres missed some chances. Well, Tony doesn't like to be the critical one, so I'll go to Rick. I don't know what Rick thought watching it from the Barca TV studios, if I'm being too harsh.
I don't think you're being too harsh. What I would say about Dani Alves was that Sevilla still didn't create anything, so it wasn't as if it was he was damaging the team, but I think we saw what happens when Xavi played against Real Madrid and he thought, okay, we can't have Dani Alves playing this game, we need Ronald Araujo at right back. So I think Xavi knows that. I don't think it's an issue. I think if the games had not come consecutively, if Sevilla came in a few weeks' time, I don't think Dani Alves would have played in the game. I just think that Xavi didn't want to leave him out for the Real Madrid game and then the Sevilla game, especially with Sevilla being his old side as well. Xavi probably felt bad about having to leave him out against Real Madrid. But if it had been, you know, two or three other games first and then Sevilla, I think Alves would have played in the other games, which makes a lot of sense because when Barca control the game so much, then you can have Dani Alves playing in midfield as technically a right-back and it's okay. But then he would have played someone else against Sevilla. On Ferran Torres, I didn't really like him or Aubameyang's game that much. They did well pressing, like Tony points out. They pressed brilliantly the whole time. But in terms of pure attacking actions, I think that Alba was kind of invisible. And it's maybe not his fault because against Sevilla, I don't think there's any better central defensive partnership that he could face in La Liga. That's Koundé and Diego Carlos are the best defensive partnership, maybe outside of Barca, if you look at it, and possibly Real Madrid, but I don't know. Militao started well, but he's kind of tailed off a little bit and was a disaster.
Well, the numbers say that Sevilla are the best team by a long way defensively. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm talking about the individual quality of those two defenders as well, because that's Alba's battle, really, against those two defenders. He had the hardest job of any Barca player because Sevilla played super defensively and their strength is that central defensive partnership. And Ferran had chances, which is always the hardest thing to do, is to get the chances, get in good positions and get the ball, and then he missed them, which is something he has to work on, as we've said before.
But in terms of Dani Alves being back to him, don't you feel, Rick, that yesterday, for example, he suffered a lot and after being on the bench in the Clásico, the feeling is that something changed with Alves as he's no longer 100% starter, because a couple of weeks ago, it was like clear that he was the best option for Xavi. But, for example, yesterday I read an information about Moy Llorenç, journalist mate from SPN of Sam Martsen, that he said that the idea was to count on Sergiño Dest as a starter in El Clásico if he was fit, but at the end he got injured. So I don't know. I have the feeling, and also after what I saw yesterday, that for Xavi, Dani Alves is not anymore a reliable option in terms of defensive actions. And the more you play as Xavi wants, pressing high and staying together in the other part of the pitch, the more you are going to receive counterattacks, as like in the Guardiola's period. on only facing counterattacks, and to face counterattacks is much important to be fast. I don't know. I have the feeling that if we were on the Dow Jones, the actions of Dani Alves are now getting lower. I don't know how to say.
The shares, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I didn't mean to be too critical to Dani Alves, but I kind of look at him from a different angle just because he's obviously out of contract at the end of the season. He wants a new deal. Xavi suggested he would maybe give him one, but if you're looking at his performance against Sevilla, you'd perhaps think, well, with other options, perhaps it's not worth renewing. Even though he's on such a cheap wage, it could become, I don't want to say a problem per se, but difficult to manage, you know, having so many people and not being able to play them.
But you also look at the fixtures. So Barca Cadiz, Monday, April the 18th. That is a pure Dani Alves game where Barca are just going to be completely camped in the Cadiz half. Cadiz are going to be defending backs to the walls, and you'd rather have someone like Dani Alves who can cross the ball, who can pick out a man, create something at right back in that game than Dest or Araujo or whoever you want to put there. But then you have Barca, Rayo Vallecano, and Rayo have good players who can break quickly down the wings, and that's a game where, like Tony was saying, maybe you don't play Dani Alves. It's about picking the right spot. Given his age, it should have always been a case of picking the right spot to play him.
Yeah. Right then, Rick, let's just hear about all the players then in Rick's ratings.
Ter Stegen 7, Dani Alves 5, Araujo 7, Pique 7, Alba 6, Busquets 7, Pedri 9, Frankie 6, Dembele 8, Alba 5, Ferran 6. I don't think I gave any subs. They didn't really do subs till quite late. Which kind of shows you that Xavi was happy with how the game was going, even if they didn't get the goal yet.
Tony's shaking his head.
Cannot believe that. 7 to Piqué and Araujo? Okay, is it okay what I heard?
That's correct. That's what you heard. That's what I heard as well.
7. Facing a team, a really dangerous team. Fast. Second position in the table. Being aware of the fact that you have been so weak during all the season. The way Araujo stopped Martial on the runs. The way of Piqué fighted was concentrated, always great. I was talking about that with Sam on the stands, on the press box. The level that Piqué is showing, even if we can think that the person is not the one that should be, we have to be, I think, neutral in terms of opinion of Piqué. He has been really great. I mean, the best Piqué is like back. It's incredible. He's now also faster than ever. You know, when at the end of the game, he was like happier than ever when he seemed that he was paying attention to the business and tennis caps instead of football. Really happy for the win. Concentrated, fighting, going to the battle with Koundé on corner kicks. Like, he's a warrior now. And Araujo is a great game for me. No doubt it was an incredible game of Araujo and Piqué. So for me, at least I would give 9 for Araujo and 9 for Piqué.
I think that's crazy, 9. I mean, look at Sevilla. Look at how they set up, how pathetically defensive they were, how they've scored 2 goals in 6 games.
Yeah, but for me, scoring, being good at defense, I have said it many times, it's not related with how many goals you concede or how many goals the other team scores you. Because it can be a thing of luck. Why I take of a real analysis if you made a good game or not is how many clear chances Sevilla had yesterday. 0. The second team of the table, 0 clear chances. Playing with Ocampos, with Lamela, with Rafa Mir, with good player, with Martial. They didn't get a single clear chance to score. For me, the level yesterday of Piqué and Araujo was incredible. I would say, as a couple, top 3 performance of the season as a couple in defense, Piqué and Araujo. Incredible. And for me, this is the best the best news of for Barca.
Araujo, one-on-one defending, he's one of the best in the world. Only one-on-one, you'd pick him for how he defends, like you say, the moments against Martial or whatnot. Piqué good as well. Piqué, I guess, getting away with one late on, some claim for a red card when he drags someone down to stop a...
No, but also he's good, Sam. Also, it was a good action. It means that he's focused. It means that he knew that he had to do the foul to don't receive a goal. 1 or 2 or 3 months ago, he wouldn't have done the foul because he doesn't care if the team loses. He's more connected than ever.
Just quickly then, where does it all leave La Liga? Barca up to second, level on points with Sevilla and Atletico, but with a game in hand. If they win that, they're 9 behind Madrid with 8 to play. Tony said we were on the verge of I Liga before this round of fixtures after the Clásico win, but Madrid got over the line in Vigo just thanks to 3 penalties, 1 missed, 2 scored by Karim Benzema as they won 2-1. So is that it? There's an interesting run for Madrid now sandwiching their Champions League games. They have a Taffy at home and then Sevilla away the weekend after, which I guess could maybe be sort of as long as we could maybe stretch it out if they win those two, Rick. I guess we're looking at that Sevilla one now as the big one then. Just quickly, there's not going to be Liga, is there?
I don't think we're looking at Sevilla as a big one because I don't agree with Tony saying Sevilla are a second team in the table. Their form is pathetic. I think they've had a good unbeaten record, but because they drew about 8 games. I think they've won 4 in 12 games or something. They're playing like a team that's 10th in the table or lower. So I don't think that's the big one. I don't think there will be a league. I think it's more or less over now.
I think that's a little bit unfair on Sevilla. Their problems are mainly scoring goals. They're very good at the back, which is obviously going to hamper Madrid. And they've got a battle on their hands to keep Betis at bay now. So they really need to win that Madrid game, even if they've sort of fallen out of any potential title race. Tony, on the verge of I Liga, you said this Celta Vigo game was key. Are we ruling it out now, or are we taking the Barca stance? You know, until it's mathematically possible, there's a slim chance of I Liga.
I don't like to take risks, but when I say these things, it's because I'm sure. I said 100% Barcelona was going to reach Champions League. I said they're going to be second, and I confirm you 100%. It's impossible. It's impossible. The La Liga is over. That game in Balaidos, that robbery that Celta suffered, makes that 100%. Madrid is champion of La Liga 2021-2022.
Tony, I just wanted to ask you just quickly as well, just because you were at Camp Nou last night for the Sevilla game. For me, I don't know, for Rick as well, I've been in Barcelona now, 8-9 years maybe, so there was the treble year and stuff, but the atmosphere around the club, you know, the welcoming of the team coach yesterday, even extending to the women's game, the atmosphere at games, as Javi's pointed out, is better than when he was here, a player. Does this feel like one of the... I don't know, does it feel like a, not a special moment, but does it feel like a particularly sort of positive, bouncing, lively spell around the club?
Yes, of course, because, you know, that's life. Good moments at life, they don't last forever. And even if you feel that they are longer than expected, also bad moments are not for forever. And don't forget that even if Barcelona won the treble with Luis Enrique, and that season, that second part of the season was great, the football of Barcelona was losing details every season since Guardiola left. And this was like the kryptonita, because it was not something really drastic. No, after Guardiola leaving, you got your football to a 9. Next season, 8.5, 8, 7, 6.5. 5, 4, 3, 2, and at the end, you reached a point with Koeman that the supporters were totally depressed. So now I think after, I would say, almost 7-8 years, because it's true that it was a great season, that treble with Luis Enrique, but since that moment, the team was really irregular. If you look at Fiatur's an article about that Barça with Luis Enrique, that I think Luis Enrique did a great job, but if you look articles, there was no consistency on that play. So since that moment, there was not the feeling that there was a detailed plan. And I think now the team, the club is on the best moment in terms of happiness of the supporters since 2015, and you know, the supporters are tired of being sick on receiving bad news, because when you don't have no more tears as a supporter, you can only be positive. So yes, this is the best moment you see, with supporters waiting the team, arriving the team to the stadium, lots of supporters, people pushing for the team hard. Yes, something special is being cooked. And it's being cooked apart from results. So it's been great what it's being created by Xavi now.
Rick, I guess this group also benefits from, I mean, there's always pressure on Barca. If they lose, it obviously would not completely change, but it would change a little bit. Obviously, they're benefiting from the winning run at the moment, but they're also benefiting a little bit from less pressure in terms of expectations. They're so far behind Real Madrid. They've had such a bad start. It's almost sort of like a free hit. I mean, it's starting to change now. Now there's expectations perhaps to finish second, to win the Europa League. But they're benefiting a little bit from that, aren't they? And I guess by next season, it'll slight, not the atmosphere, but there'll be more expectations, won't there?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Barca are like a ball that's been dropped from a height. And it dropped and it dropped and it dropped, like Tony was saying, down the numbers and then down, hit rock bottom. And now it's bouncing up. And when you start to bounce up, you have that momentum and you have that excitement and you don't know how far the ball's going to go, but you want to know how far it will go. So I think that's Barca at the moment. Just hit the bottom and are bouncing up, and they're bouncing up pretty fast and pretty well by the looks of it.
Tony, a tidbit to finish with?
We have a tidbit and related of in terms of signings. What I could know speaking with people in Leeds is that they are really, really, really angry with Rafinha's agent Deco. They are really angry because they started talks for the renewal of the player, and suddenly Deco did like not answering at the mobile, like
ghosting.
Ghosting, like when you're flirting with a girl, but then you realize that you don't like her, or she does it with you. We have been in both parts of this game, that she doesn't answer you. So that's what was happening with Deco and Leeds, and they are really angry with him because apart from having stopped the talks, they consider that he has been leaking information and pressing the media to get Rafinha to go to Barcelona. So I would say that the transfer of Rafinha going to Barcelona, it's now a bit more difficult in terms of Leeds would be happier to have an agreement with English clubs instead of with Barcelona. I don't know what's going to happen, but being told that it's not the right moment for Deco to do these things. This is, I don't know how to say, comillas, literal, frase literal. How do you say in English?
Yeah. In speech marks, quotations?
Yeah, so it's real credit.
Direct quote.
Yeah, this is not the good moment to do all what he has been doing last weeks. So let's see what happens, because of course, if Dembele stays, it makes no sense on signing Rafinha.
Yeah, Deco's role as an agent, very interesting when he's so closely linked to Barca. Even if Joan Laporta says he's not on the payroll, he was once again in the VIP box last night, a regular at games at Camp Nou, doing sort of indirect work for them. So interesting to see how this one pans out. And Tony also spoke in depth about why Rafinha perhaps won't happen on last week's Q&A for Patreons, which is still available over on our Patreon. We'll have more content on there up later this week, with Barca in action on Thursday against Eintracht Frankfurt in the Europa League. So if you want more of a Siempre Positivo fix before next Monday, you can join us over there. We're also on Discord chatting throughout the week. In the meantime, stay positive.